Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, my friends, once again to another Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 55 for July 15th, 2014. I'm yours, Jack, and I'll be guiding you through all this magical networking, switching, servers, and everything connected. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech podcasts at techpodcast.com. Folks, please check out our website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message, and I wish you would. So many of you out there are shy that listen to this show and like just shy away. You don't want to pick up a phone and make a phone call and ask a question or give me an idea for a future show and say, hey, Jack, what's going on there? Folks, if you send your emails in about servers or if you send your voicemails in, voice messages in, I can promote this stuff. I send this out there, and we have a large audience that listen to this show, a very large audience, and I do appreciate each and every one of you tuning in every week that may have that answer for you. If I don't have it or if I can't find it, somebody out there will locate it and will find it and be able to help you through your issues. I tell everybody in the networking business, and I have a large networking group of people that I talk to weekly. And those very people often will help me through an issue, or they'll call me up with an issue they're having, and we'll discuss it on the phone. And it works out very, very well. So with all that reach that we have and the reach that this show now has, that this show is now out there, and it's pumping out there, pumping all this wattage into your computer and into your car, and you're listening, you're tuning in every week, I know you have a question. But I tell this network of people, I say, look, don't reinvent the wheel. Because if you're having an issue out there, I guarantee somebody else has had that issue, and they are willing to help you as much as they possibly humanly can. And if you have any questions or ideas for future shows, remember, if you have any questions or ideas, or you just want to simply send me a comment on a show, it says, Jack, look, I listened to the show, and I think you could do this better. You can do this topic better. And that is what I'm looking for. You can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and at Technoman. Tonight's show is getting started a little bit later. If you were going to listen to it live at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm sorry about that. My daughter did come back home today. She came home for a couple days. And she's visiting. And she said, Dad, let's go out and get some dinner. I said, that sounds like a great idea. So we went out, we got some dinner together, and it ran a little bit over. And I'm terribly sorry about that, but I'm here now producing another show and pumping some new ideas into your mind. That's what this show does. In tonight's show, we're going to get right to it here. We're going to be talking about layer 3 and some layer 2 switching. Now, if you've never used layer 3 switching or you don't even know what I'm talking about, stick around. Because this might be something you're going to need one day and something that you're going to want to put into your network and maybe utilize it somewhere. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, the size of the networks and if you need layer 3 switching or if layer 2 switching is just fine and dandy, it works well for you. And for most of us, it does. Layer 2 actually does work. So let's go ahead and we are going to jump right into tonight's discussion. There was a decent line drawn between the concepts of switching and routing. Switching occurred at layer 2 and routing at layer 3. It was that simple. That is, until the last decade of the last century, when certain networking vendors began to blur the lines. And the terms multi-layer switching, or MLS, and layer 3 switching was introduced into the world. I want to introduce you to the concept of multi-layer switching this evening and hopefully pump some of this out there to you so you can grab a hold of it and get your head around it and understand a little bit better. And granted, this show isn't a show that's going to give you the ins and outs, the every possible look at the every possible step of layer three switching. It's going to be something that you're going to have to dig into if you're interested in it and learn more about it on your own. My ideas here is to bring you a topic, talk about it, kick it around, and just put it in your head. And I'm going to explain how you should use it and when you shouldn't use layer three switching. Let's go ahead and get started. What is layer three switching? It's a combination of the best of both switching and routing. It provides the speed of switching and the intelligence of routing. Now, folks, most of you, all of you probably, would have a router in your system somewhere, in your network. You're routing packets somewhere. And I guarantee you're doing this if you have some sort of internet backbone from Verizon, the cable company, some form, even in your home, you have some form of a router. And you're routing packets between your computer, your network, and the world. That's what the router does. But now we're blurring these lines and we're putting these layer three switches in networks so we can route packets between switch A to switch B, switch A to switch C, and we can guide these packets through the network more cleanly. What does that do? That gives us overall better bandwidth. It gives us overall better security. We talked a couple weeks ago about VLANs and how VLANs does this. But you know what? Layer switching can do it also. It provides the speed of switching and the intelligence of routing. Remember that. The speed of switching and the intelligence of routing. Now, how, you might ask, how do we achieve this modern marvel of networking? It is achieved through the cooperative process between devices at both layers 2 and 3. It is a daily feature. Now, we're going to discuss a Cisco networking environment. Cisco requires three entities to implement multi-layer switching. First is the switching engine, which is the SE. The router processor, which is the PR. And then the MLS protocol, or the multi-layer switching protocol. As one might think about this, the SE performs the switching function. The PR performs the routing function. And the MLS provides... The MLS protocol provides for communications between these two devices. Now, see how the routing is coming together? It's providing the protocol for these two devices to communicate. So this aside, this is very one simple concept that makes it possible for the flow. Now, the flow is the flow of data. That's what we talk about in this show, right? Connecting, moving data around our networks, storing it, managing it, and everything else in its features. That's what this show is all about. Now, flow can be defined as a stream of packets from the same source to the same destination using the same application. As an example, a flow could be an HTTP session between a source browser and a target server. Get it? That's why we're routing packets, right? We route. We tell the router, hey, I'm looking for HBO.com. Zoom, it goes out to the internet. It finds the target router to the target server, HBO.com, drops you into their server, retrieves the web pages. That's how we route packets. In a Cisco MLS network, the initial packet is a session, is routed via the PR. Remember, the PR is the route processor. But all substantial or subsequent packets in a particular session are switched by the SE. Remember the SE now, the switching engine. The SE maintains a cache about these flows and can determine whether or not a given packet is part of an established session. If so, the SE rewrites the packet info as it has been processed by the router and then switches the packet. The process is commonly referred to as route once. So it routes it once, and it occurs at switch speed, not at the slower speed or the slower router speed. This is where the layer 3 switching is coming into play here. Now, a lot of big corporations, especially when you're doing, I know, especially when we got into voice over IP. So when you're doing VoIP, they talk about your speed of your switches. It's so critical because that's where if you ever use VoIP in your network, so you have voice over IP phones, you buy those from Cisco or D-Link or wherever you buy these things from, and you plug them in your network. You pick up a phone, you start talking, you have a delay in your voice. There's an echo on the line. Chances are that is because the speed of the packet is not hitting its destination phone fast enough, and you're getting a delay. That is where layer 3 could come in very, very handy, because you can route that packet directly from headset 1 to headset 2 when headset 1 calls headset 2, and it's a really great system to do that. Now, let's talk about when and how to use layer 3 switching. Layer 3 switching is generally implemented in a network environment that requires a higher level of performance in packet transfer speed. Get it? That's what we just talked about with the VoIP. Now, it's a higher level of speed. Another place you can find this used, if your company does any video conferencing. And it's huge nowadays, folks. So if you're in the IT business, I suggest you wrap your head around this a little bit and get to know a little bit about video conferencing. Because when your CEO comes to you and says, hey, I'm flying to Japan tomorrow to talk to some business partners in Japan, and we're going to talk about da-da-da-da-da, you can say, wait, I set up a video conferencing center, sir, and you can save a ton of money on airfare just by simply doing a video conference with that person, that partner in Tokyo or wherever they may be sitting. And you can do this by making sure you have a high level of performance for your packet transfer speed. In a routing-only environment, each packet is designated for a different subnet on your internal network, must be sent from the switch to the router. So we talked about this with VLANs. If you're going from one subnet to another subnet, there has to be a communication between those two different subnets. Call it a bridge, if you will. In the old days, we used to build bridges in our networks to bridge something to something else. That's exactly how this is set up, because you're bridging one subnet to another subnet. So critical. And to do that, you're going to do that with a router. Now, this will determine the best delivery of the packet, because remember, a router is a very smart device. And I know some years ago now, when I owned my internet business, we had to get our heads around this and understand routing, because we started selling off frame relay circuits. So you know that was a while ago, but we sold frame relay circuits to businesses. We had to route our internet packets to their router, and we made that connection. And so their people, when they're on the internet doing whatever, we made sure that that router and those packets were delivered to us. Now, a router is smart, and that is the reason the whole internet was built back in the early 50s and 60s. It wasn't public, remember. It was built for the military, and it was built on the idea of if there was a nuclear explosion at point B, and it takes out a whole entire circuit, a whole entire neighborhood, they wanted to make sure the communication still flowed. That's why the smart guys design routers, because a router can look for the best possible path for a packet to go. If path A is no longer available, it will take path B, path C, path D. It will find its destination. That is how a router works. That means you'll be routing your packets to where they need to go. Now, in a Cisco MLS network, the initial packet in a session is routed via... Oh, I'm sorry. We're on the wrong part here. Let me scroll down here a little bit and go back to... I start going off on these tangents here with you. This process introduces an inherent measure of latency for all packets designated to cross subnet boundaries. We found this when we set up a firewall and we started to subnet our IP addresses down. And I had a company look at our firewall because I said, look, I want to make sure we're as secure as can be. And folks, if you ever work on firewalls, if you ever work on your network security and you do any of this stuff, make sure that you get another set of eyes on it. Somebody you trust. You know, print your firewall configurations off. Say, hey, read this over and make sure it looks kosher. Because a firewall and us, we're like locksmiths. We design these configuration files based on what we believe is best practice for our network. Sometimes if you get another set of eyes on it, what they're going to say is, whoa, wait, you have a port open here that you really don't need, and you can close that out. So it's good to have that other set of eyes because it's going to look great to us because we did it. Well, what the company found when they looked at mine, they said, well, wait, Jack, why do you have all of these? And if you've ever done a NAT statement is basically saying, I want this bank of internal addresses. We put up a Class C network, and I want this bank to be NATed to this outside routable IP address. I found to get rid of some latency, most people, and probably your firewall or your router probably has this NAT statement in it. NAT, let's say 0.0.0.0-192.168.1.253 or .253.253, whatever. You may be routing a whole entire Class A network over one outside address. And guess what you're going to have is latency. We found our internet speeds dropping through the floor. And what happened was I decided to subnet all those IP addresses out. I subnetted them down to Class C networks, and now we have 10 Class C networks routed outside to 10 individual outside addresses. What it did was it took our internet speed through the roof because now we're only have that latency of 253 addresses routing through one outside address. That got rid of our latency problem. Might be something you want to look at. I know we're getting a little bit off base here, but we're just touching on routers and how to route those perfectly outside. Once I explained it all, they told me that I should probably be labeled some kind of a networking engineer, which I'm not. I'm just a guy that looks at it, figures it out, and puts it together the proper way. I mean, I've been programming firewalls and routers for decades now, and it just seems to work. So it worked very, very well for us. So think about that. Now that we're talking about the little bit of latency, for all the packets designated to cross the subnet boundaries, so if the router shows a high CPU usage, this can mean even greater delays. Because as you're routing packets between these two subnets, remember, the router is working twice as hard. It's grinding. It's dying. You're killing it. Yep. Make sure you have a big enough router, big enough firewall to handle whatever traffic you're throwing at it. To shortcut this process, the switch can participate, thereby offloading some of the packet processing responsible for the router. So if you can route in the layers 3 switch, you can actually offload some of this work by the router before it actually hits the router to go outside or hits the router to go to one of your other companies, one of your other destinations. It will help greatly to have that layer 3 switch. Now, for this to happen, several hardware and software requirements must be provided. From a hardware perspective, the switch must be MLS compatible. Remember, multi-layer switching compatible. And the proper MLS component must be installed. Oftentimes, the switch must be outfitted with a daughter card for the supervisor engine. The PR router must also be MLS compatible. Certain models provide this as an option, and others don't. A full discussion of the many different configuration scenarios for MLS and beyond the scoop is the scope of this feature. Now, once you have the MLS hardware in place, you'll also need OS and iOS. No, not Apple's iOS. And iOS is the operating system in the firewalls, in the switches. It is the operating system. It is known as the ISO, iOS, or ISO. Now, you need one, a version that supports MLS functions. Generally speaking, there are internal and external PR configurations. Most networks already have a router in place, and often this router can be configured as an external PR for one or more MLS switches. If your existing router is stressed with the current inter-VLAN routing load, it could be a prime process. Or you could simply upgrade the router and skip MLS altogether. Remember, we just talked about a bigger router. As we route more and more and more packets, and I get on our people above us that, you know, I call it the higher pay grade, as we're writing our budgets, our yearly budgets, and as they're adding more components to our network, as they're adding, today we have now security cameras. We have security locks on doors for your business going through your network. You have many devices coming into your network. We talked about people bringing stuff from home and getting on your network. This puts a stress on the back end. You, as the IT expert for your company, has to have that say, so to say, look, I need to upgrade the back end. If you're going to add all this stuff, I probably need to look at my router and make sure I can route all these additional packets. I need to look at my switches and make sure these switches can handle all this additional switching going on without overheating and burning out every day. This is where we come into play. We, as the IT experts, come into play for our company. We sit with people, we design networks, and we say, look, we need to do this back end before you can upgrade that front end. That's just simply the way it works. If you start to lose performance in your routers or in your switches, look at raising the overall switches. Right now, I'm already looking, I'm digging into things, and a lot of you out there listening to this show may be already doing this, is right now we have 1 gigabyte fiber going to all of our switches. Well, I think we're going to be overtaxing that speed. I think we need to pump more speed into those switches. So maybe I want to go to 2 gigabyte fiber switches, or I could just change the GBIX. Now, if you've never seen one of these, it's just a little device that the fiber plugs into to go in the switch. You can buy those at different speeds, and for what I understand right now, they get up to 10 gigabytes in speed. The fiber can handle it, right? The fiber is just light. It doesn't care how much you throw at it. It's the electronic device between plugging the fiber into your fiber switch that determines how much overall speed that actual switch is going to receive. Now, remember this, I consulted on one particular project that somebody was doing, and they bought those. They bought 3 gigabyte GBIX that go in, and they plugged them in, the 3 gigabytes, and they tested it, and they wondered why they weren't getting 3 gigabytes at the switch. On the other side, in the networking cabinet in the switching room, those were still 1 gig. 1 gig switches or 1 gig connectors. So if you don't feed it with 3, you can't have 3. If you feed it with 1, you get 1. I don't care what you put on the back end. The front end has to have what you need it to provide the switch with the 3. So it's 3 by 3. And that's just the way it simply works. We were talking about the router being overtaxed. And the process is actually reducing it because the router load is so much higher. So you can simply upgrade your router. Now, you may improve your VLAN router installed if the switch is very similar to the external implementation. In some network configurations, all modular switches in the network are outfitted with a Layer 3 module. This would tend to be the optimum configuration, as a packet would never leave the switch and transfer the network or transverse the network media in the routing process. Packets would simply be passed back and forth across the switch's back plane between a Layer 2 and Layer 3 modules. I would 100% recommend, and I didn't do this for a long time. I do it now. When you buy a switch, plan for the future. And I often say in these shows, I often say when I talk to anybody in my networking community, if you buy a server and you think that you're going to need 1 terabyte of storage. Buy 3 terabytes of storage, because guess what? It's never going to be less. In our business, we have to plan for more. Everybody wants more. We have to give more. And man, I ran into this problem at our job about 3 years ago now, where our internet speed was biting the dust. I told you I rerouted my packets. I subnetted down. I kind of fixed it. I put a nice little Band-Aid on it for the remainder of the year until I get back to the budgets. Because what we did then was, and what was happening was, our internet speed was actually slower than what people are getting at home. Remember, your office no more can't have a T1. Remember, T1 used to be the big thing. Hey, get a T1 line, you got 1.5 megabits a second. Woohoo, up and down. Wow, great. Fine, fantastic. We're doing great. Yeah, when everybody had dial-up at home, we look like heroes. But now when people have Fios at home, when people have cable at home, I mean, you know, I have really bad cable internet service where I live, but I still have triple the speed of a T1 line that I used to use in my business years ago. That when I had my business, I had a T1 line, and I was selling 56K frame relay circuits off of that, and people were blown away. So what we had to do at our place is we upgraded our internet. And we are now at 100 megabits per second, which is still, you know, not the greatest in the world. But I tell you what, everything is snappy, speedy, and everything works perfect. It's not all about speed. A lot of us get wrapped up in that too much. I know I get a little bit off base here. And I know you guys listen in on this stuff and say, where is he going with this? The main thing is, believe me, we do speed tests, right? As IT professionals, we check our speed, see what our speed is, what's the speed. In the end, the main thing you need to worry about is what's called the end user experience. And I went to a conference one day, and I was really, my eyes opened up when the people started talking about this thing called end user experience. I never heard of that terminology before. Because we get so wrapped up in speed, right? We have to have speed. We have to have tons of speed, faster, faster, faster. Gigabyte, triclebyte, 2 gigabytes, terabyte, flop bytes, whatever. Really, as long as the end user experience, when they click on the link to get their email pops up. When they click on a web page to play a YouTube video, the YouTube video plays. If you're in banking, when you're routing your banking stuff from your terminals to your servers, as long as it flows and they don't sit there and watch, you know, a spinning wheel or an hourglass or something, then you're doing your job to the fullest. Because your users are not going to do a speed test. They're just not. They don't even know what that is. So don't even worry about it. Anyway, so remember now, now let's go back to this backplane. The backplane, not a lot of people understand, because we like hardware. IT people love hardware. One of my questions in interview is, do you like hardware or do you like software? Every IT person I talk to, I love hardware. All right, unless you're a professional software, maybe you like software. A backplane is basically the main plane or the circuitry in the switch itself. So if you can use that backplane, and if you have modules in your switch where you can simply tell one port to be layer 2 to the other module to layer 3, it is going to be very fast, super fast, because you're not connected with the cable. You're not limited to copper. You're not limited to fiber. You're not limited to your GBICs, nothing. Everything just flows super fast, and that is the best. So that's where I was going with this. Remember, we talked about buy more. So if you're going to buy a switch today and you say, well, Jack, yeah, all I need is layer 2 switching. Buy it so it takes modules so you can put that layer 3 in there later on, because you're going to need more. If you work for a very small company and you're very, you know, if you're with it and you can plan for the future. Now plan for the future. And I don't know if I ever told you a story. I once had a CEO come to me and said, Jack, write me a 5-year technology plan. I said, man, I really wish I could, but that would be a fairy tale. He said, a fairy tale? What's wrong with you? Don't you know anything about technology? I said, sure I do. Yeah, today's technology, pretty much. Even maybe next year's technology, I kind of know what's coming up. Folks, if I knew what was coming 5 years from today, or if you knew what's coming 5 years from today, then you better be inventing it because you're going to be billionaires. All right. We live in, I call it the now world. We live today. We live today, but we plan for at least a year out. If you can figure a year out, you're doing pretty well. So if you buy anything, buy it so it's a little bit more. And if your company is small today and you plan correctly, when you have that growth, that big growth, the CEO is going to come to you and say, man, here's a bonus check. Here's an extra $5,000 bonus check for you because you are so smart, because you were prepared for my growth. That's what the company owners and the CEOs want. They want you to be prepared for their growth. And that's what we're talking about. So if you can buy a switch today, it's layer two. That's all you need. And that's fine. I have a lot of layer two switching. Buy them with the layer three capabilities. If you buy servers, if you buy a NAS, a network attached storage device, buy it with more storage than you're going to ever possibly need right now. Because I guarantee a year from now, you're going to need more and you're going to be buying more. You might as well be prepared. It's cheaper in the long run to buy stuff like this up front than it is to add it later. Let's say you bought all layer two switches in your network. Let's say you have 50 of them. A year from now, you find out that you want to add 10 layer three switches. It's going to cost you a load of money for the layer three switches, more so than what it would cost you for the modules to put in the switches that you prepared for. Now let's talk about when not to use layer three switching. One thing that you can throw a kink into your MLS, your multi-layer switching configuration, is an access list on a PR. The MLS flow cache can function in several different modes using different masks. One mask only operates on the destination IP and is not compatible with any access lists. If you're not familiar with access lists, you may have never programmed a firewall. A firewall, I know the Cisco firewall because I programmed hundreds of access lists. An access list is basically saying this can do this, this can't do this, this can do this. It's all the configurations in that firewall. It's called the access list. And we do like an inside access list. We do an outside access list. But this is saying that this is not really compatible with access lists. Another maintains both source and destination IP and will only work with a standard access list. The IP flow mask mode maintains the source, the destination, and port info, and is the only mode that can accommodate extended access lists. Now remember that. If it can maintain the IP flow mask, the mode maintains the source, destination, and port info. Folks, that is an access list, right? We're saying the IP, the mask or mode, where it's going to, the destination where it can come to, and what port it can come through. That is the access list. That's what you're looking to do with a firewall. Now, it can use that. Conflicts could arise when using the ISO server load balancing, SLB, on some switch models. Also, certain features, such as header compression, can cause MLS to be disabled. Sounds like a lot of rigmarole. I suggest, and remember, I told you when I do these podcasts, I bring you the idea. It's your job to either implement it or not. It's your job, if you're going to implement it, to do a little bit of background searching, a little soul searching, and use your vendors. I know we deal a lot with a company that I don't like to mention on the show, so I don't. But the vendor I've been dealing with them for probably over at least a decade. And they are wonderful. They have engineers there. If I bounce an idea off of them, they'll say, look, Jack, this is what we're going to do. And then we start working on pricing. If I can't, and you'll never be able to afford what they want to do initially. These are engineers. These are people designed to build it the very best, the very solid, the way you could do it. And if you're a multi-trillion dollar corporation, do it that way. If you're a nonprofit organization, you need to find a way to do it a little cheaper. So tell them, hey, let's do plan C. And they will design plan C for you. It will work. It will work to what you want to do. And what's nice about it, it will cost you a lot less money. Don't ever go with plan A. Plan A is tough. Wide layers. switches are used to build networks. Linking networks together and forwarding or switching data from one port to another based on information gained from the packets being transmitted. Information is organized to confirm or to conform to the OSI, the Open System Interconnection 7-layer model, which is adhered by the network vendors to ensure interoperability between their products. Hence, terms like Layer 2 and Layer 3 and so on. You will hear them used mostly in relationship to switches, but other network devices also. I'm going to go through these just so you understand is how Layer 2 switch works, and then we'll tell you about some advantages of Layer 3. Let's first tell you what Layer 1 refers to. Layer 1 refers to as a physical layer described by the electrical interface that isn't of much interest to switch vendors. Rather, it's a Layer 2, the data layer link. That's what we deal with, right? We deal with data. We don't deal with these electronic pulses through the circuit. We don't deal with the current. We don't worry about that. That's Layer 1. Layer 2 is the data link layer. And in most switches, it decides how to move the packets around the network. It's here, for instance, that a switch can find the media access control, or MAC address, of both sending and receiving devices. Layer 2 switches learn the MAC addresses automatically, building a table which can be used to selectively forward packets. For example, if a switch receives a packet from MAC address X on port number 1, then it knows that packet designated for MAC address X can simply be forwarded out of that port rather than having to try each available port in turn. Remember the old hubs? And this is one question I have for all my interns and for all my employees is what's the difference between a switch and a hub? And if you don't know, look it up, because if you're in this field, we need to know this stuff. And this is one thing like it. I mean, a switch, even if you tell me the switch is intelligent and the hub not so much, one guy put it a different way. One guy said, well, the switch is smart and the hub is dumb. Okay, well, I kind of go with that. One guy actually told me the switch costs more money and the hub costs less money. I won't go with that because you're not telling me what it does. But the smart and dumb, that's kind of scenario that I'm looking for, right? Because you're looking for, it sees that MAC address coming in on port 1. It zips it out another port to go pick up the information. It comes back. It puts it right back on port number 1 because it's intelligent. A switch is intelligent. A hub is not. Because Layer 2 information is easily retrieved, packets can be forwarded, switched very quickly, typically at the wire speed of the network. Layer 2 switching, therefore, has little or no impact on network performance or bandwidth. And because they are relatively dumb devices, no setup or management is required, making them cheap and easy to deploy. Take out that word dumb because I don't like using that in the same phrase as switching. All switches are relatively smart, and they're intelligent creatures because they're designed that way with all the great electronics, the great circuitry, and the great ISOs built into them things. Not all of them are managed. Some are unmanaged switches, which you probably want a bunch of those in your network. Here's my golden rule. If you're a tech director, if you're a network administrator, and you're listening to this podcast, if you go to your CEO and say, we have to buy 400 managed switches, you're a crazy person. It's nice to have them, but it is overkill. You're taking your budgets and you're expanding those budgets to beyond beliefs because of your wanting to do whatever you want, think you want to do with them switches. Here's the golden rule. If you have a networking closet, let's say you have a networking closet and you have I'll give you one of my examples. A 24-port fiber managed switch. Off of that 24-port fiber managed switch, I may have two dumb switches. I don't like the word dumb. I may have two unmanaged switches with that. And my managed switch, which I can talk to the closet and see the closet, and I can see the ports that those unmanaged switches are plugged into, I just save my company a ton of money. A ton of money. Because I'm not managing every switch in that closet. I don't need to manage a rack full of switches. There's not a whole lot of sense for that. If I want to VLAN some circuits, I could VLAN my circuits out to the managed switch, right? And I can plug the people into those managed ports, and I could take care of those folks. And I can plug everybody else into my two unmanaged switches for just normal packet usage and normal stuff that they need. So again, you're saving your people a ton of money. Now, let's just hit this real quick on layer threes. Layer three switch advantages. Intelligent packet forwarding, routing based on layer three information in traditional and functions in the tradition and functionality of routers. It's here that the IP address is found. For example, enabling a router to link two different subnets together, specialized routing programs, protocols also use layer three, enabling routers to learn routes between networks. Now, if you have any ideas or any comments or anything you want to tell me about switching, anything you're doing in your closets, I would love to hear from you. I would like to know what you're doing out there with switching. And we can go on and on and on about this discussion for hours. But I love keeping these podcasts at about 45 minutes as is my golden time. And, you know, I can baffle on and I can BS with you all night long. But I love to do this a certain length of time for you, traveling to work. And or listening at home. I don't want to take up your whole evening when you're tuning into the podcast. But study up more on this stuff and read all you can read about layer two and layer three switching. Don't go out and buy books on it, folks. I get so tired of tech people going out there and buying books. Don't do that. That's what the internet's for. It's for us. It's for us to learn with. Keep learning. Folks, I want you to please remember to help me out. Use my Amazon link. I know so many podcasters asked you, so share your purchases on Amazon with everybody out there. Just, it truly helps the show, and it helps us to support the shows, to buy new gear and whatever else I might need here. Matter of fact, I just bought a new mixer, you know, a few weeks ago because the old one blew up. All you got to do is visit the tipsfromtheserveroom.com webpage, deactivate your ad blocker, and you will see the Amazon link. Folks, if you want to learn more, or if you want to learn something, or you want to learn everything about Windows servers, you don't know anything. Somebody emailed me and said, Jack, if I don't know anything, can I take your class? Absolutely. I teach you about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, and VMware ESXi Server from A to Z. Please sign up for one of our online courses at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. And remember, the courses are self-paced. Watch a video, take a short quiz. At the end of the course, I mail your certificate, good for framing or sending it out there to find that special job that you're looking for. Once again, sign up for tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. By all means, pass this on. And go to iTunes if you could, please, and visit the show in iTunes. And click on that review link, give it a couple stars, maybe four or five, and write a little review. That helps to bring new listeners to me, new listeners to the show, and that helps out greatly. Get those emails in here. I want to hear about what you're doing out there in your networks. If you have any questions, send those in. Folks, I hope you have a great work week this week, and if that's possible. And I'll see you next Tuesday for another show here on Tips from the Server Room. Take care, my friends, and I'll see you then. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.